Welcome to the Milk Harbour Process, episode 35. I'm Anthony Wall. On this episode, I'll be talking about the new Milk Harbour release, Leash. Like a long ass time since I've done one of these. Last month I released the Hitchcock Blondes album and a podcast with the boys, and I haven't done any podcasts since then. I was doing one a week for months, and it's an incredible amount of work to put one of these things together, and I don't make any money from them, so I have to be careful not to get burnt out. Because the last time I got burnt out on a project, it took me nearly 15 years to find the passion again. Leash is one of the songs I wrote during that period. I mentioned before that I never stopped writing and recording during those 15 years, and I even did a few gigs, but I found it difficult to muster any real interest. So it's fun and very artistically fulfilling to see songs from that period resolved. Leash was written around the same time as All Things to All Men, the first Milk Harbour release. I was living in Pittsburgh and met up with a friend a couple of times a week to jam. He was a drummer and had a dedicated music room in his house, so we would have a smoke and a drink and just go nuts for a few hours. Eventually we found a bass player and played some gigs as Death Victorious, named after a beautiful sculpture on a gravestone in Cleveland called the Angel of Death Victorious. During those sessions I wrote the music for about 8 songs, and I'm hoping they'll all eventually get the release they deserve. Some of them will need more massaging than others, but Leash hardly needed any at all. The main riff is something that Jason Allen, the bass player from the Hitchcock Blondes, came up with. We had a couple of riffs that we would jam between songs at shows sometimes, and this was one of them. We never wrote a full song around it, but it always stuck with me. There are a number of obvious influences here. The main riff is straight up 70s rock, Deep Purple, Thin Lizzy, etc. The chords in the verse are very David Gilmour from Pink Floyd. Running arpeggios for the guitar solo was something I picked up from Brian May, as well as something the Irish Celtic rock band Horselips did. The original arrangement is for a 3-piece rock band, and while it sounds fine, heard at high volume with the safety net of the transient nature of live performance, it sounded pretty thin as a recording, especially the endless arpeggios during the solo. I kicked around the idea of replacing the traditional rock instrumentation with synthesizers, and did some research into bands who do this, but nothing I heard really struck me as suitable. Although I heard a couple of things that I definitely hope to incorporate into future productions. Bands like Young Gods, Pendulum, Master Boot Record, and Carpenter Brute are some good examples. I found all these acts by posting on the Sound on Sound magazine internet forum, which is how I found the incredible keyboardist you hear on the track, Paul Ward. Before YouTube, the Sound on Sound forum was an absolute goldmine for audio nerds. The members came from all sorts of audio backgrounds, in music, film, TV, theatre and education. There were electronics wizards who understood high-end equipment at component level and absolute beginners making beats in their bedrooms on the cheapest equipment available. One conversation I started on the forum about reverb ended up with me flying to London to sit in on an orchestral session at Abbey Road. I even got to play the famous Steinway Vertigran piano that the Beatles used on some recordings. During my 15-year hiatus from serious music production, I hardly visited the forum at all, and when I logged back in I was sad to see that the life has sort of been sucked out of the place. My guess is the availability of free audio engineering tutorials on YouTube killed it. But there are a few of the old guard left, and Paul is one of them. He's been a synth wizard since the 80s, playing in bands like Quiet Point and Wavestar, as well as releasing a number of solo albums. Recently, he's been collaborating with guitar legend Gordon Giltrap. I sent him the demo of Leash, and I think it was as soon as the next day that he sent me back the synth extravaganza that you hear on the track. There are two tracks of Hammond organ, three tracks of Mellotron, and three tracks of Moog synthesizer. I'll provide links for all this stuff below if you want to get your nerd on. The bass part was played by regular guest of this podcast, Sebastian Elsenberg from Last Band on Earth. I played the guitar, programmed the drums, and sang the vocals. Paul is also an accomplished audio engineer and gave me some useful tips when it came to the mix. There are a lot of competing frequencies across the arrangement, and finding room for everything without sacrificing energy was a tricky bit of business. One lovely thing he suggested was to turn up the high end on the guitar sound so that the vocals have to fight to be heard, but to balance it so that the vocals always win that fight. That one simple trick adds so much aggression and power to the mix. And this is one of my favorite things about audio engineering. There's always something new to learn. It's incredible to think of all the people who had a hand in bringing this song to life, and all the different places and situations that it passed through before reaching your sexy ears. I wrote the lyrics during a particularly lonely time in my life. The verses are a meditation on classic themes and tropes from Irish folk songs, and the chorus references the old adage of depression being like a black dog, which is ironic because that idea was popularized by Winston Churchill, who's directly responsible for some of the history that my stony heart was hammered with in verse 1. Further inspired by Horselips, I wanted to write rock lyrics that could also be sung in a traditional style. I channeled Thin Lizzy for the lyrics too. Phil Innett is one of the great rock lyricists, and the line, "That sounds romantic but it's not," in verse 2, is my attempt to use the same technique that he uses in songs like The Boys Are Back in Town, where he aggressively breaks away from the lyrical structure to make a hard point, like, "Friday night they'll be dressed to kill, down at Dino's Bar and Grill. Drinks will flow and blood will spill, and if the boys want to fight, you better let 'em." I'm sure there's a formal term for this, but I don't know what it is. And I'm sure Philo didn't either. The artwork for this release is a contact print of photographs of a gig by my first band, Stone Culture, taken in 1997. It's inspired by the artwork for Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds album, Live Seeds. The photos have absolutely no connection to this song apart from me being in them, but they have a great old-school rock and roll energy, even if in reality the band didn't. Still though, I played my first real gigs with Stone Culture, fell in love with audio engineering during our first recording sessions, and learned a lot about what works and doesn't work as a band and musician. So I'm happy to have the chance to use this relic, even if it turns my stomach to see my tender 19-year-old self smoking cigarettes in some of the photographs. Before I wrap up, I want to remind you that Milk Harbor Volume 1 is available from Bandcamp. It's a collection of the first 12 songs from this project. The mixes have been given a polish and the whole lot have been remastered, and I'm really pleased with how they sound. You can also find the Hitchcock Blondes record there, as well as the two releases from my project with Dave Zeller, 10 Stories High. Thanks for listening.